Fun fact, with you, I had three Sebastian or Sebastiano on this show. I don't know. Like, now you are, this is becoming the...
Yeah, rename the podcast, maybe.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Developer's Bakery, a podcast about open source projects, tools, and libraries for software developers. My name is Nicola Corti, and I'll be your host for the show. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on either Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or directly on the website, thebakery.dev. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Developer's Bakery. Today, I'm super excited to welcome on stage Sebastian Caspari, Android engineer at Mozilla.
Hello, yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for being with us. And now I want to give you some seconds to introduce yourself. So where do you work? What's your background? And so on.
Yeah, hi. So I'm Sebastian Caspari. I work as an Android engineer at Mozilla currently for 6 years now. Have been doing Android for a long time now. Remember working with the emulator and couldn't buy a device yet. Was waiting for the first release. And those last 6 years, I worked on a bunch of Android projects at Mozilla, mainly Firefox for Android and supporting projects. And I'm located in Germany. I have two kids.
Awesome. So all about Mozilla. And the reason why I invited you on stage is because I want you to talk us about Phoenix. So what is Phoenix?
Yeah, Phoenix is the internal project name of Firefox for Android. And it's the name of the new version. Like 2 years ago, we rewrote basically Firefox for Android, and the name we picked is Phoenix, written F-E-N-I-X, not like the bird, which was the project name of Firefox for desktop when it started like a long, long time ago.
Awesome. So what you're telling us is basically that if now I go on the Play Store and I search for Firefox and install the app I'm installing is the one that comes from the repository called Phoenix.
Yes, that's GitHub. Correct. Yeah.
Awesome. So I'm super eager to understand how you go from GitHub to our phone. So can you please tell us a little bit about the story of this big rewrite?
Sure. So this, as you mentioned, this new rewrite lives completely on GitHub, and we use the repository, the issue tracker, everything is on GitHub and open source. And for a release, as an example, we kind of use the GitHub release process with some added tooling on top. So at Mozilla, we have a release management team. Sounds weird because usually in companies, you don't have a team that only cares about releases quite often, I guess. But since there's so many coordination needed in a browser and with different teams, there's usually one team that also manages the releases. And they have an internal tool that we called ShipIt. And at the end of the day, it creates a GitHub release. And we have a lot of CI running. And this will automatically upload to Google Play. And that's the release version process. And we also have automated system that creates nightly builds every day and also beta builds frequently. And they also end up on Google Play as separate apps.
Awesome. So I'm actually curious to understand how you keep the development of Firefox for Android and Firefox desktop in sync.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you even share some code between the two?
Yeah, a little bit. That definitely has changed during my time. When I joined Mozilla, everything was in a big monorepo, and you used a bunch of very custom Firefox tools to build Firefox, and at that point, much more was shared. very simple view of the browsers that in the browser engine that renders the web and the JavaScript engine, there's a lot of C++ code. This is the same code, more or less, that runs on desktop and an Android phone. On top, you have some JavaScript, like, for example, Firefox desktop, the UI, there's a lot of JavaScript involved. There's some part shared with the mobile version, but it's not much anymore. And then on top, you have on desktop the UI that is mostly HTML today, I think, and on Android, it's standard Android UI nowadays. It wasn't always the case. And so nowadays, most of the browser engine, of course, is shared because we do not implement a separate engine for Android. But the closer you get to the UI layer, the more it's very special Android code. And a new thing we recently tried to share code between Android, iOS, and desktop is to have some teams implement their features in Rust, the Rust programming language, and that's something still quite new. I think this new Firefox for Android is the first Android app that has used it, and that is a way to try having teams independently build features. For example, Firefox Sync, where you can synchronize your bookmarks and history around. In the past, it used to be that every platform, at least desktop, Android, and iOS, had their own implementation of this sync algorithm and machinery. And of course, over time, there are differences and incompatibilities. And that's something we try to avoid with this new approach.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about feature parity. Do you try to achieve feature parity between the three platforms, or are there even scenarios where one of the browser might ship something before the others?
Yeah, definitely. To my knowledge, there's no overall process to keep everything in sync. It's usually happening more organically that certain teams, let's say, implement a new web platform feature, and they might drive it through the desktop process and the mobile process. So this team that is building this new feature is taking care that it ends up on both sides. Or there's just a different team starting on mobile or desktop, and then they kind of want to get their feature also to the other platform. But it totally happens that things start only on one platform or for a long time only exist on one platform. Like if you use Firefox for Android today, on the home screen, you have the ability to create collections. And that is only available in the Android version currently.
Awesome. That's also really curious. So would you say that there is a platform that is has more feature than the others, or is it just like it happens like that?
I guess it's more like the core set of features that the browser needs, like table stakes for a browser. They are available everywhere, and then the kind of product and engineering teams individually will also do their explorations and come up with new features and try things. I guess you can't really say one has more than the other, but different ones at times, yeah.
Great. So previously you mentioned a little bit about monorepos. Mm-hmm. I'm actually super curious because a lot of people on this show in the past mentioned how they evolved their setup from being like a bunch of repos to like a single big monorepo. Mm-hmm. While what I heard from you sounds like the opposite, right?
Kind of. The thing for us back then was living in the desktop. I say desktop because desktop is such a strong, big part of Mozilla. Living in this desktop repository meant using all those tools, having to use the CI. And that meant that the process felt very foreign when you came in as an Android engineer. So I had to learn those Firefox build tools. And at the time, there was no Gradle. So you couldn't do what you were used to. So that kind of was not really helping any Android engineer wanting to work on this project. An employee that came with an Android background or a contributor. I remember when I first built Firefox for Android, I felt like an accomplishment because I managed to build the thing. It was really hard to follow this documentation and figuring out what to do. So we, as Android engineers, were quite unhappy with that because usually if you work on a regular Android app and you might need a new dependency, you declare it in your build Gradle file and that's it. Here it was a complicated process where you needed to learn about the CI and how it caches dependencies and where it gets it from. So when we had the opportunity to try something new, we definitely wanted to try to move this out, only the mobile part, to use all the standard tooling that the Android world has, that everyone uses in this industry. And that was the main reason. The monorepo, I think, was still a great thing for us because it allowed multiple teams to work together on this app. That is now much harder that we've basically split parts of the app over multiple repositories. The core app is still on GitHub, but there are a lot of Gradle dependencies that might come from other repositories.
I see. So I want to ask you a little bit on the story of Firefox for Android. Other than the big rewrite, like since you've been at the company for quite a long time, are you able to tell us a little bit the story of Mozilla on Android? Like where they effectively started, how, and yeah, a little bit of what took us till this point.
Not too much, because it also predates my time at Mozilla. Firefox for Android is now more than 10 years old. And the way I understand it, it was kind of started more or less as a passion project, I think. People wanted to have Firefox also on their mobile phones at the time where it slowly started. So if you think Firefox is almost 10 years old, so it almost started at the time when Android started. So people got new phones and they wanted wanted Firefox on it. And yeah, I guess that's how it started.
Yeah, was it like, so you mentioned that there's been a rewrite. So are there were also other rewrites in the past, or you just rewrote the first version of Firefox into what we can call V2 at this stage?
That was the first one. There was maybe a little rewrite. I mentioned before, I think, that Firefox on desktop also renders its own UI, not only the web content. And that used to be the case on mobile too, where the first version of Firefox when I didn't use Android UI, it rendered its own UI, basically. So it was kind of a full screen app. That was super slow, and you needed to first start the browser engine to start rendering the UI, and on old Android phones, it took a couple of seconds, so it was awful. So the team at the time rewrote kind of the whole UI to use native Android widgets. So maybe that was kind of a rewrite. But then 3 years ago, I guess, we came to a point where we didn't actually rewrite. And that has a quite complicated story. I guess it's a kind of once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's not the first thing you do when you want to change things. But multiple things came together. Essentially, Firefox was at the time also already almost 10 years old. So it used a lot of things you wouldn't do in a normal Android app you write today. Like patterns from the early days of Android, there were content providers, you used cursor loaders. I guess no one would ever write this anymore today. And since we lived in this monorepo, the browser engine and the app, they were kind of mixed together. You can think of it like there was a message passing system where some JavaScript code might send some messages and we received them in the Java world, Java at the time, and did something in the UI and then sent things back to the browser engine. And there was like a lot of overlap happening. Some things were implemented in JavaScript because it was written by someone who came from the desktop world. Some things were written in Java because it was written by an Android engineer. It was a little bit messy and there was no clear boundary. Like, what is the browser engine part? What is the part that is Android code that needs to be in Java? And at the same time, we started to build other apps too. Firefox Focus, for example. And we felt the need to somehow have the ability to support multiple apps. And we started to split more things into their own libraries so that we could support Firefox Focus, for example. But we still had this old thing in a monorepo that wasn't really an Android app where we could use libraries that easily and where the architecture was a bit wonky. And that together, we came to the conclusion, okay, we might need to start from scratch. We've built all those libraries now that we can use to build Firefox Focus and so on. Let's use those libraries actually to rebuild our browser. And yeah, that was kind of, at the end, a complete rewrite because, of course, we made decisions to go to GitHub, use Kotlin, use full Gradle setup as any Android app. And that's kind of how it started, yeah.
Awesome. So, like, I'm super interested in actually understanding what is needed to build a browser. Like, when you do an Android app, the majority of the time we're talking about apps that do like API calls, load data, and they display that on a list to the user and have some buttons to do some extra thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe you do something more complicated like a fitness tracker or a music player, but you don't get to write a browser every day. So I'm pretty sure there are like peculiarities or other specific things that only a browser app is requiring. So I now want to ask you what is actually needed mm-hmm. to build a browser on Android?
Yeah, I think what's kind of interesting is a lot of Android apps have multiple screens and a UI hierarchy that is quite complex. And as you mentioned, you might do a lot of requests to get data from some servers and cache it. In a browser, a lot of things happen just in one screen. You're on a browser screen, and you almost feel like the actual app UI should go out of the way because you want to browse the web and not look at screens in the app. So a major piece is the thing that renders the web. This is like the content the user really cares about. What you at the end of the day end up with is maybe a very small UI surface, but a lot of interaction between the browser engine and the Android world. That still, as I mentioned before, but nowadays with a nice clean API between it, we've wrapped our browser engine into a standalone library called GeckoView, and that's something we use in our apps, and a lot of features need to somehow interact with the web in some form.
Awesome. So you mentioned GeckoView, and I saw there is also open source on GitHub under the Mozilla org. So I want to ask you a little bit more yeah, what it is. Mm-hmm. Can like other developers eventually use it? Would they find it like useful for something? And if so, for what?
Yeah, so if I go back in time again, in 2017, we wrote Firefox Focus, which is, I think I haven't mentioned it yet, it's a browser focused on privacy features. It's kind of a browser that is always in private mode, doesn't remember anything you do. And the initial versions of Firefox Focus used WebView because we wanted it to be a small app. It was our first app out of this monorepo, so it was quite quite an advantage for us to use WebView because we didn't need to figure out how do we actually get this thing that lives in a monorepo in this Firefox for Android code that you couldn't pull out into Focus. So we started it as WebView, but we realized pretty soon that WebView is too limited to actually build a lot of the browser features we wanted to build. So we needed to somehow get the engine out of this monorepo into Firefox Focus. And the solution to that was Gecko View, which already kind of, in theory, existed in the codebase for a long time because it was maybe a dream of some engineers for a while to have a way to just take the browser engine and put it into another app, like using WebView, essentially. And for using it in Focus, we started doing exactly this, trying to cut the ties with Firefox for Android at the time in this monorepo and creating a standalone library that is Gecko View that nowadays you can get from a Maven repository, integrate into your app, and use it for whatever you want.
Awesome. So if I'm building my app and I need to use WebViews, I can instead like use this library as like to replace WebViews. What would be the benefit other than using the system WebView?
Yeah, it's kind of the same benefit that we had for Focus. So the API layer of GeckoView is much more powerful. You have ways to hook into the engine that WebView doesn't allow you. Just to give you some examples, Firefox has web extensions where users can extend the functionality of the browser. GeckoView supports those too, so you can have web extensions in your browser engine in your app. Or another sometimes maybe helpful feature is if you ship the browser engine in your app, you are in full control over the engine and its features. WebView can under the hood upgrade to whatever version you are not really in control, which is a nice security feature for the user because you always want to have the latest engine, but it can break your app. And it has happened in the past that you relied on WebView features and then WebView updated. You didn't update your app, but your app was broken.
I see. So now we talked a little bit about GeckoView, mm-hmm. but I saw that there is another library under the Mozilla org that, by the way, it was trending for multiple days. Like I stumbled upon the library multiple times in the past, and okay. It's called Mozilla Android Components. I wanted to ask you a little bit, like, what is this library about? Is it just like a collection of UI components? Would it be useful also for other developers to use that? And if so, for what?
Mm-hmm. First, I didn't know it was trending. That's great to hear. Again, if we go back to the time where we built Firefox Focus, it was kind of a key point, I think, for mobile at Mozilla. We started to build other browsers for Amazon devices, for example, and there was Firefox Lite in Southeast Asia. There was a Firefox version for VR headsets that run Android. And a lot of those apps started by forking Firefox Focus because it was such a simple app. It was independent from the monorepo. You could take it and turn it into something else. But that meant we had kind of clones of this app and they started to diverge. And it was kind of a maintenance overhead to have all those browsers that underneath kind of are similar, at least at the start, and you didn't want to have teams maintain all the same things. So, and our Android components repo or project was kind of the solution to that, where we said, let's build libraries that support multiple use cases that you can put together as you like, and where you can remove pieces and replace pieces as you need, so that we have kind of a shared foundation. And in the ideal world, you only have a thin UI layer on different apps and configuration and different set of components you compose together to build an app. So we slowly started to take pieces out of our apps, wrap them in their own libraries, and prototype an architecture that allows you to actually do this, put them together, remove pieces, and add other things. And nowadays, we have, I think, over 100 components in this repo. And with the rewrite of Firefox, it's finally at the point where, like, all our apps use some subset of those components.
So we're talking, like, can you make some examples of components there? They're like, I believe they're specifically for browsers, right? Like search bar and so on.
Yeah, it was never intended to only be for browsers, but since browsers have been such a strong focus for us, most of it is very specifically for browsers. You can find pieces in it that help you in other cases too. For example, there's Firefox Lockwise, which is a password manager from Mozilla, which also exists on Android. Some parts of it use components like Firefox Sync. So, yeah, it is a strong browser focus. But depending on what Mozilla will do in the future, this focus might change.
Awesome. So now I want to switch a bit from the development of Firefox to the deployment. So you mentioned you use a lot of the GitHub workflows and integrations. I want to know a little bit more about it. Like, how do you go from the GitHub repository to the Play Store?
Essentially, when we decide to make a release, it is not different than other projects on GitHub, where there's a tooling will create a tag and a release on GitHub, and this will trigger a machinery on our CI. Mozilla has a custom tool for that too, called Task Cluster, which is kind of a generic framework for running tasks or trees of tasks, and that is used to build everything Firefox on all platforms. This need definitely came from the desktop side again, where you have so many configurations where you need to build Firefox and test Firefox on. That's something we rely on too. And basically, this will trigger this train of tasks, and they will automatically upload to the specific stores. So it's not different than most other companies that have automated this flow, I think.
But then I want to ask you, how do you handle alpha, beta, nightly, and stable versions? Because I know Firefox has quite a lot of them. Do you automate all of them from GitHub and your CI?
Yeah, kind of. So I simplified my description of Task Cluster a bit. It has a bunch of features like essentially cron jobs and so on too. So for nightly builds, for example, we trigger those automatically. And if you install a nightly version from Google Play, you will notice that you will get an update at least every day. And that has been more challenging now that we are using so many repositories. So you will see that under the hood, there are also nightly versions shipped of Gecko View, the browser engine, nightly versions of every component we use. they will get automatically integrated into our main branch by some tooling. And then we will build Firefox for Android from the main branch. And that is all automated. For beta, I think someone still presses a button to make the decision we ship a beta. Because sometimes you want to make sure that certain things end up in a beta, so it's not fully automated, I think. But it's essentially almost only a press of a button that is needed.
Great. So now, still on the deployment, I want to ask you a bit on the problem of reproducible builds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to have open source code and to see like how everything works under the hood, but who ensures me that what I see on the Play Store is actually what comes from GitHub?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever dealt with this kind of issue in the past?
Not directly. It's not a strong focus because I think we can't really guarantee that much. Since at the end of the day, you kind of need to trust Mozilla that they do the right thing, and you need to trust Google as well that they do the right thing. If you buy an Android phone, I guess you trust Google already. If you decide to install Firefox, I think you should trust Mozilla too. So from that side, it's not a strong focus, I think, for us. Apart from we want reproducible builds, like if I build the same commit again, then of course I want to get the same app again. But apart from that, there is nothing I think we specifically do so that the user can check. But of course, there are other options. One of them is FDroid, which is a repository, kind of a Google Play replacement for open source apps, I guess. They are very keen on solving this problem, so they create their own build of Firefox where they do their own guarantees. That's something people can look into. And since it's open source, you can just build it yourself. If you want to really make sure this is the thing I'm building and I want to review all the things, then maybe you should also build it yourself. That's always an option. And building your own Firefox should not have any disadvantages. You should get all the features. Some things might not be happening under the hood, like reporting crashes, because we are not really interested in crashes in your own custom builds. But from the user point of view, I think you should have all of the features if you build it yourself.
Awesome. So now I want to touch base a little bit on Firefox Focus.
Mm-hmm.
Like we mentioned it in the past. But one thing that I think it's curious is, and correct me if I'm wrong, so you started to write Firefox Focus, mm-hmm, as an independent project. Then Firefox for Android was rewritten. And mm-hmm, like, now I want to ask you, what's the relationship between those two at this stage? Because to me, Firefox Focus sounds like a customized version of Firefox. You just take Firefox, you enable some flags, you like enable privacy mode, like incognito mode, always, and that's it, more or less. Or is there more that like I'm missing?
Yeah. Firefox Focus is putting a strong focus, on privacy. So the history is kind of maybe a lucky accident at times. It started on iOS, where Apple introduced a content blocking API where companies could implement content blockers and ship them, and they would get used in Safari to block content. And that's something Mozilla did too with the first version of Focus, which was essentially a content blocker that you could install, and then it blocks content in Safari. And from there, this idea evolved into, what if we turn this into its own thing, a browser that is only for throwaway sessions? You use it, it will not save any data about you. It will not track you, and it will also block all the trackers of other people, like ads and things that want to track you, what you do. And it slowly evolved from that. And later we decided, let's try this on Android 2. And we tried to not do a one-to-one port, but also kind of integrate more into the Android system. And people, I think, started to like the simplicity. If you have Focus installed as your default browser on Android, then you can click on links in other apps and it won't like taint your browser profile or history. It's safe to open any link and then click on this little trash can icon and everything is gone. And I think that was appealing to people, just to have this layer in front of your actual browser to capture all the things. And in most cases, that is enough. And if you really decide, you can go from Focus to your actual browser. And to this day, a lot of people really like this separate thing. And regarding the relationship, it started independently. It's the reason why we started this library process, since we wanted to share this functionality. And then with the rewrite of Firefox for Android, it kind of, yeah, has the same technology stack under the hood, just has a different emphasis on what is more important. Like Firefox for Android needs to kind of address all people. It's a multi-purpose generic browser for everything the web offers, and Focus is very specialized.
Awesome. So since you touched on tech stack, actually, I haven't asked you yet, what's the tech stack of Firefox for Android? Like, you mentioned you wanted to realign with the Android community. So I'm pretty sure you folks are using a lot of popular libraries, but I'm interested to understand, like, if you're using like an architectural pattern, if you're using something peculiar that, you say like, we bet on this and it was successful for us or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in general, I think we try to avoid bets since we are, expecting, of course, this to be a long-term project. Like the old version of Firefox was 10 years old. This is hopefully the foundation for at least 10 more years. Also depends on where the Android platform is going, of course. So always since the beginning, we tried to not jump on everything that the Android community is currently excited about, because that can also switch quite fast. And that was, since we always were a small team, it was never the case that we could refactor the whole app every 2 months. So, in the first version of Firefox, we're always very close to the system. That's why we had those cursor loaders and so on, because that was what the platform gave you. Nowadays, this has changed, of course. Also on the Android platform, like with all the things the Android team now provides us with Android X and so on, this has changed. We use a lot of Android X, of course. Who doesn't? We use the Kotlin standard library and what is attached to it, like coroutines and so on. Apart from that, we still don't use that much because for one is we want to be really aware of what kind of code we add. I think that is sometimes maybe something people in the Android community don't look too much into, because if you include a library into your app, you're essentially giving this person that is maintaining this library commit access to your project. Like, this is code someone else writes and it runs on every device that has Firefox installed. So that is kind of scary, I think. So we want to be really aware of what kind of things we add. And also APK size is a very important topic for us, so just throwing everything in is not something we want to do. But regarding the architecture, so we have multiple layers of architecture because we have, I mentioned those 100 components, so there's an architecture how those components can interact with each other. And then there's the architecture more in the app at the UI layer. So what we're currently using is we have fragments for every screen, and we use kind of a Redux pattern where every fragment has its own store that keeps a state, and the UI subscribes to the store, updates itself based on the state, and there is event handlers essentially that will dispatch actions on the store to update the state.
Awesome. Now let's move from the code to the people. So I'm actually really curious to know how many people are actually working on this project actively.
So the main Android team that is working on Kotlin code, let's divide it by that, is maybe 8 engineers, roughly. And then below that, so this team maintains Firefox for Android and our components. And then below that, there's GeckoView, which is kind of 4 to 5 people, I think. And then below that, there's the browser engine and a ton of people working on it. And it's hard for me to say actual numbers because I'm not sure. There's also overlap with, a lot of overlap with desktop, so it's not really easily dividable, like how many. But a lot of people, definitely hundreds, I think.
Yeah, so on the external contributor side, I wanted to ask you, like, how does it really work? Is this, like, are you receiving external PRs mostly for, like, small bug fixes? Or is there also, is there ever been a community-contributed feature that was added to Firefox?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's recently has been less because maybe haven't been as strong focusing on it. And we probably need to change that. But if I look at my whole time at Mozilla, yes, there were people that were actually the code owners of specific parts of Firefox. So very involved people who know the most about specific areas and who frequently contributed and improved those areas, where even we as employees asked those people questions like, how should we change this? What do you think? But the my majority, definitely, as you mentioned, those are small contributions. It's either people who are just interested in open source and I want to contribute to maybe a known project, so they choose Firefox for Android, or it's people that there's a bug. They're annoyed by a specific bug. They want to fix this bug or improve a feature. So we have all kinds of those contributions, yeah.
And so for those, like, let's say that someone in the audience now is extremely interested in Firefox. They maybe are a user and now they want to contribute as well. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend as a starting point for people that wants to be involved with Firefox?
Find a project that you're interested in. So this can be Firefox for Android, it can be our Android components or GeckoView, or essentially any other Mozilla project. I think there is a website called, I'm not sure about the exact name, something like whatcanidoforMozilla.org. Where you can answer like 3 or 5 questions and it will suggest you some projects you can contribute to. And then depending on the project, it's different. But on the Android side, if you're interested in contributing to Android, the best start is just going through the whole process with a very simple bug. There's this label good first bug on GitHub, I think. I think we have been pretty bad in labeling in recently. I think that's an exercise for me to take home. So once this episode releases, I hope we have some first good bugs in the repository. And they are very simple, like remove this line of code, change this string, add the license header here. Like super simple. They just help you to check out the project, build a thing, run the tests, and open a PR, and guides you through the whole process. And then we also have some other bugs labeled. What was the label? Help needed, I think. And those are maybe more complex. So basically, find a bug that you think you can solve. And then usually just comment on the issue. Hey, I'm interested in working on this, because the people that have labeled those issues, they are also keen on helping you. Like, we want to help you to succeed. And just making sure commenting on the issue will help you to avoid writing code that maybe is not needed anymore. And definitely, if it's more going into a feature direction, definitely talk to people first. There's also a Matrix chat where you can talk to people, because otherwise you might open a PR and we unfortunately need to decide we can't take it in. Because at the end, there's also a UX team, a product team, and they have opinions about how the what direction the product should or should not go.
Awesome. And so do you have some learning material or readings material that you think people in the community that wants to onboard on Firefox will benefit from?
To be honest, I think we are terrible at this at the moment. You can always start with the readmes in the repositories, and they will link to other resources too. So they might give you enough information. It depends on what you're looking for. For all the other projects, I hope it's easy enough for an Android engineer, because you can clone the repository, you can open it in Android Studio and just press launch. So you should be able, if you have done Android development before, to just get started. And the same is true for the Android components repository. If you open it, it might be super scary because there are 100 Gradle modules. But if you look through the run configurations, you will find a couple of sample apps that you can just launch and then start from there digging through the code.
Awesome. So now that we're close to reach the end of the episode, I want to ask you one final question. How do you see Firefox evolving in the future? Like, are there any major feature or any another rewrite, maybe not, but any other big projects that are coming in the near future?
Yeah, so I really don't hope a refactoring. I think now we have a path forward where we can evolve. Like, the previous app was kind of in a dead end, and now there's an open road in front of us, so that looks better. Feature-wise, yeah, of course, we are always trying to figure out what is an interesting thing we can do, especially what is a thing we as Firefox can do that maybe others don't want to do. Under the hood, yes, definitely. I think with Jetpack Compose, there's a lot of change coming. We just recently started using it for basically writing some components new code in Jetpack Compose, and also starting to use it for small pieces inside the apps. And it's kind of clear that this might change parts of our architecture and how we build components specifically. So that's currently, from the technical point of view, definitely the biggest change I see. And maybe also an interesting part to contribute in the future, like if you're interested in writing Jetpack Compose code. Definitely the whole team is excited about it and wants to use it for everything now.
Awesome. So I hope we convince some of our listener to give it a try and to send a pull request on Mozilla Firefox.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you very much for being with us on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
And I also want to thank everyone for listening, and I'll see you all in the next episode.